Welcome back. This is Jerry Pippin. We're talking with Lynn Buchanan, and we're talking about remote viewing. And at the break, Lynn was explaining what happened in the Army when they sent him to the unit that did remote viewing. You thought they were putting you on completely, I take it. I mean, you thought you were on candid camera.
So you really thought they were just putting you on.
It's crazy. The Army doesn't do this kind of stuff. But sure enough, they did. And I tell you, I took to it like a duck to water, and it just became so natural.
Can you tell me your first controlled remote viewing experiment with the Army? Or is that classified?
It wasn't Terry Waite. It was one of the Iranian hostages.
You remember the year? What year that was?
I think it was around 79. It was around 84, I think.
Oh, okay.
84.
Okay.
But this was a political hostage over in the Middle East. And we were keeping track of him every day. And, of course, during this time, I was being trained myself in how to do this technology.
Okay, now, during this time in the Army, who was training you?
Ingo Swan.
I know him.
Researcher with SRI had developed this technique. He had taught the members of the unit. I was supposed to train with him, and yet the Congress cut the contract the week before I got there. And so I was training from the other members of the unit who had trained with Ingo.
Mm-hmm.
I have since become friends with Ingo, and just a totally fascinating, talented person. But I was trained by the members of the unit. And like I say, it just came so natural to me, and I love it.
And I still don't understand it exactly. When you remote view something, control remote viewing, is it like watching a movie, or do you feel things, or is it a dream, or what?
It starts out kind of like a dream state.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it wide awake. There's no trance. There's no altered state or anything else.
So and maybe daydream would be better than dream. But I mean, it's almost like you're there.
They monitor it there and ask you a question about what's around you. And you can look over, or you can listen, or you can smell, or, you know, sniff the air.
Well, as I said, it's almost like you're there.
It is almost like you're there, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, the other thing, are you saying time does not exist? You can go back, like to 1948, to the Aztec crash, or forward, or whatever?
In controlled remote viewing, there is no difference structurally between saying move forward 5 feet, or move forward 5 years, or move back, you know, move back 1 mile, you can say move back 10 years. And structurally, there's no difference. The remote viewer just does it. And starts.
How is this possible? I mean, is there an explanation scientifically?
There are probably as many theories about it as there are people.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are as many theories as there are experts. And none of them agree.
Yeah.
And the fact is that nobody knows. However, we know that it works. We know how to work it. And as a result, we worked it, you know, through basically three wars, and saved a lot of lives, saved the government a lot of money.
You say saved a lot of money, saved a lot of lives. Are we talking about going behind enemy lines with these remote viewers, just thinking about things and figuring it out?
Or we'll do tomorrow. The Gulf War, we knew ahead of time what Saddam Hussein was going to do the following day of battle, and we passed that information up through the Department of Defense. The guy didn't stand a chance. When the helicopter that was going to rescue the Iranian hostages,
mm-hmm.
when that thing crashed, the remote viewers knew it and sent the information up through the chain of command. And the president got our report of the crashed helicopter actually 10 minutes before the electronic confirmation came through from Iran.
On that Iranian hostage thing with the aborted rescue attempt with the sandstorm, what really happened?
They just hadn't planned for a sandstorm. Sand got into the motor and into the rotor and everything else, and it just took the helicopters out.
I mean, you guys didn't tell them it was going to be a sandstorm?
Nobody asked us. We were limited. See, back in the 60s, the government got caught doing mind control experiments.
Yeah, I remember.
And so they were very, very careful about letting us do anything without specific tasking from a customer. And in fact, we weren't allowed to do that. And so if no one tasked us, we didn't do the work.
Lynn, do you think we're still doing, I mean, the military, are they still doing remote viewing?
Well, I don't know. When you retire, they quit telling you. See, I hope that they have the military unit now. I think they would be crazy not to. You know, it'd be stupid for them not to have it, but then that changes the question to, does our government ever do anything stupid or not?
And you're doing controlled remote viewing in private enterprise now. I mean, you have your own company, and corporations are your clients mostly. Can you tell us exactly what you're doing now with this?
Okay, I'm, of course, teaching. We teach.
When you say teaching, what do you mean?
We, after 6 years of training, we allowed one other teacher to start working with us. And she lives in Amarillo, Texas, and does a fantastic job. I mean, she is extremely well trained. She's a top point remote viewer, and she's a good teacher. The higher level classes I teach, either here in my home or else generally in another country, I will go, you know, I'm going over to Ireland and England this year and maybe Canada. I've been to Australia and other countries, Japan and all that. But, you know, I do the teaching for the upper level courses, and a woman named Lori Williams does a basic course in Amarillo, Texas.
So she's in your company?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And what is the name of the company?
Problems, Solutions, Innovations, PSI.
And you have a website, of course, and we have a link to it.
We certainly do. It's called CRVIEWER, .com.
For a potential clients, may I ask, are you expensive?
Fairly. and we make absolutely certain that it's worth it. When we train, it's $1,000 a course, but we stay with you after the course is over. We continue the education. We database all of your work from then on. Also, you can come back to the course as many times as you want to for the rest of your life at no charge, you know, for review, for auditing, and renewal, and so on. Like I say, we database your work. We, since we keep a database on your work, we know your strengths and weaknesses, and so we vouch for you for any customers that you might want to have. You know, if somebody comes, the police, let's say, come and say they want you to look into a case, but they want proof that you can do the work, we have the database. We have, I mean, firm, hard proof that you can do the work.
Now, what is the difference between what you do for the police department and, say, a psychic?
We provide details. CRV, controlled remote viewing, is all about details. A regular psychic, and by the way, there are some really, really good psychics out there. I'm not putting them down at all. There are a lot of them that I see their work and I think, boy, I wish I could do that, you know. They will tend to give generalities, and one of the downfallings of psychics is that they jump to conclusions. In CRV, we're taught never to do that.
Well, you don't jump to conclusions or draw a conclusion. I guess we'd call you emotionally neutral. What percentage, Lynn, do you have as commercial clients to, say, police departments?
We do a lot for police departments simply because we never charge them. When people come, they have missing children or something like that. We always work through the police department. We never work for families because when you do, that just puts them on an emotional roller coaster. It tears the family up more than anything else to work with a psychic. It always does. Also, you have families get something from the psychic or from the remote viewer, and they go out and trample crime scenes, and, you know, and it's just never good.
So as far as crime scenes, you don't have to be there. You can be halfway around the world, a little different than many psychics. Now, how about your corporate customers? What do you do for them?
The corporate clients want, you know, future projections. They'll have enough money for maybe one or two projects that they have, and yet they'll have five or six projects on the table. Well, they want to know which ones are going to make money and which ones are going to fail. And what we do is we will take each project and actually work it out as to the results of that project.
And by work it out, you mean you actually go forward in the future and tell them what will happen?
That's right, yeah.
And there is no limit on how far forward you can go?
No. Then we find out what unforeseen influences are going to affect those projects and so forth. And we present that information to the company, and as a result, then they have a better decision-making process. We don't make the decision for them. We just tell them what's going to happen with each project if they follow.
I'm curious. How far back have you gone in the past? I mean the furthest. Yourself, personally.
We have gone back through prehistoric times.
Really?
Yeah, and of course what we're looking for is things that are physically provable. And as we do our training, we never do things like Melchizedek of the planet Scooby-Doo or whatever, you know, the galactic.
So you don't do things like go up to Mars and look around and validate things?
We do things that are physically feedbackable, physically provable.
Okay.
And that way we can keep a track record of the strengths and weaknesses of all the viewers. And when we actually go into work for companies and all, like if we go to work for an archaeologist and we say dig here, we want to find out what's in the hole just as well as they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if we don't find out, then we have no feedback for our viewers, and we have no way to track their strengths and weaknesses.
So you've actually been doing remote viewing for at least three decades, Lynn.
Yeah. Man, that makes me feel old.
Well, I mean, this seems like this could be something that would be emotionally draining, but you seem to be holding up pretty well.
I would like to give another website here.
Sure, go ahead and plug it.
www.8martinis.com.
That's an interesting name, an interesting URL. 8martinis.com.
Well, when people in the government found out what we were doing and that they were, you know, using our intelligence, and that we had actually a higher accuracy than any other intelligence organization, even Spy in the Sky satellites. And when they found out about us, the joke was that they would be so shocked that they would go out and have an 8-martini lunch. And so this is a publication that's free for downloading. eight martinis. It's a comes out once every 4 to 6 months, and it has a lot of information about the remote viewing and about what is done and so forth by a lot of the different people who are in the unit.
Well, Lynn, it's been very interesting finding out about remote viewing and you as a person. It's been nice talking to you. Hope we can visit again soon.
Well, good.
Thanks
talking
for coming
to you.
On.
Hope I get to see you again.
Okay, me too.
All right. That was our recording we made with Lynn Buchanan about remote viewing. And in summary, we need to go over exactly what's happened here. It's still a work in progress, and we expect to get a further report from Lynn later on. He had 11 remote viewers. They were tasked with the idea of just enough information that they could zero in on whether or not there was a crash at Aztec in 1948 with a UFO. And the information came back, by and large, from all 11, saying that there indeed was a crash. And some startling news also came about. More than one remote viewer seemed to be picking up a signal, if that's the term, that, in fact, the United States government, somebody, a police officer, an MP, a military officer, an enlisted man, somebody shot an ET and killed him because the ET was not going along with the program. Whatever that program was, we assume we were trying to rescue them. At least that's what we hope was happening. We also got some mixed signals about where they took the debris and the survivors, and if indeed there were survivors, and it appears there were. And we are going to follow up on that, I'm sure. This was a great idea by Katie McClure, who works with the Friends of the Library Association out there in Aztec. And as you know, the symposium, the money goes toward the library. And they have a state-of-the-art library out there in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. And I mean that affectionately because New Mexico is one of my favorite states. And there's some pretty nice areas there, unique and scenic and hard to get to. But if you get a chance, I would urge you to consider Aztec as part of your vacation plans. And if you go to Aztec, by all means, go by the library. It appears that they're going to continue to follow this up. I do know that this initial report, the one we talked about earlier in the program of Janet Saylor, is available now at the Aztec Library. So if you're in the area, you can actually go by there and read the report for yourself. I don't think they'll let you check it out, but I guess you can sit there and make copies of it or whatever. And as I say, we'll be following this up with Lynn Buchanan later. One other thing about the Aztec Library and the Friends of the Aztec Library, on their website, and we have a link to it on our website, where this program is, as a matter of fact, you can go over there to their website, and we have a link, as I say, and make a donation to the library. If you could not make the symposium, I would really ask you to make a donation to the Aztec Public Library. It's a good cause. It's tax deductible. They have a PayPal thing there. They also have, and we do too, their mailing address if you want to send a check, and they would appreciate it. And we will continue to follow the Aztec crash of 1948. As we said in the opening of the show, at least 4 UFO crashes occurred in New Mexico from July 1947 right on up through March of 1948 and maybe beyond. There is some evidence, scant as it may be, that there might have even been an ET UFO landing at Los Alamos. We're trying to follow all of that up, and we do urge you to follow our new internet TV series Roswell Revelations and Beyond, which comes out with a segment about once a month, as we will continue to cover the Aztec crash and the other crashes in New Mexico. And, of course, be sure and join us in Roswell, New Mexico, over the 4th of July. Jane Swartley has been our web producer. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin, and we thank Janet Saylor and AspieFiles.org and her great little symposium that comes about in September. We'll be up there, too, at Angel Fire. New Mexico is our second home. Thanks for listening. Until next time, cheers.